Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is childhood obesity. I'd like to extend our thanks to Kaiser Permanente for sponsoring and accrediting the program. I'd also like to remind physicians and other healthcare professionals that you can earn CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the slides and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so log on today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished panel of experts with us today to talk about childhood obesity. Dr. Philip Wu, Department of Pediatrics, Kaiser Permanente Northwest in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Michelle May, family physician and member of the American Academy of Family Physicians, Phoenix, Arizona. And Dr. Francine Kaufman, professor of pediatrics, Keck School of Medicine, University of Southern California, and Children's Hospital in Los Angeles. Thank you all for joining us today. The topic of childhood obesity is an important issue for physicians to understand. During the next hour, we plan to cover the following material: the current epidemiology of childhood obesity, the difficulties families and clinicians face in overcoming childhood obesity, the levels of intervention around childhood obesity and the importance of early intervention, and learning how to communicate with families. We're fast approaching a crisis on childhood obesity. Many people are starting to say that this might be the first generation to not live as long as their parents. To give us perspective, we had an opportunity to visit with Dr. William Dietz, director of the Division of Nutrition and Physical Activity at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Dietz helped set the stage for our discussion.
As of 2004, about 18% of children and adolescents in the United States were obese. That amounts to about 9 million children and adolescents in the country that are obese. Between 1980 and 1994, the prevalence of obesity in adolescents tripled and doubled in children. I'm often asked what changed in the United States to produce this epidemic of obesity, and the answer is everything. There is food that's readily available, tasty and inexpensive every place we go. Those foods tend to be high in calories, high in fat, high in sugar. In addition, there are fewer opportunities for children to be active. Another potential contributory factor is how busy people are, that there are fewer opportunities for family meals. Meals that are consumed outside the home tend to be higher in calories. 65% of all children have a television in their room. The more television that a child watches, the more likely they are to consume the foods advertised on television.
This is all about childhood obesity.
But we also have to recognize that this is not a problem that's going to be solved by physicians. There's so many overweight children and adolescents that an individual physician or even every physician in the United States couldn't possibly treat this successfully or prevent it successfully. Therefore, we need much broader cultural changes, changes in the way we live, in the foods we eat, and the access that we have to physical activity. The choices parents make about what their children are fed and how much television they watch or whether to put a television in their room, those are key decisions in terms of trying to prevent the onset of weight problems in early childhood.
Dr. Kaufman, you were involved in a similar program we did on childhood obesity about 3 years ago.
Right.
What's changed and what is the latest?
Well, the numbers just keep increasing, so there's more and more children who are affected by overweight and obesity. Right now, there's 17.1% of American children who are obese. And if we look at by age range, so even 2 to 5-year-olds continue to increase. So over the last number of years, they've doubled from 7% to 14%.
Wow.
You know, and we also know that certain populations are at much higher risk. So, for example, African-American children and youth have a 21.5% chance of being overweight. Hispanic children and youth have a 21.8% chance of being overweight. And this is in comparison to the non-Hispanic white population, where the rate is only 12.3%. So that's a significant difference. We also know that children born to mothers who have gestational diabetes are at higher risk for being overweight. And that's relatively new information.
You know, it's a bit of a tough question, but who's to blame?
This isn't because children and their families are necessarily doing something wrong. You know, this is a broad spectrum problem that occurs because of how we live, how our communities are put together, how people have access to food, their ability and chances to have exercise and be physically active. So this is a broad-based issue that cuts across many different lines. Mm-hmm. It's no one single factor that's responsible for it. Yet, as a whole, it's extremely important, and we need to get a handle on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Wu, let's take that a step further. Why should dealing with childhood obesity be a top priority?
Just about every clinician in the country is facing this constantly. So essentially, there's really no denying it. You know, one big reason to deal with it is because we're facing it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and also, this is work that really gets to the heart of taking care of children. Yes. This is all about trying to encourage and maintain good health into the future. So this is really preventive medicine.
Yeah, and I think, I'm sorry, but you know, it seems to me that particularly those of us that are in primary care, we have these long-term relationships with our patients and their families. And this is a long-term problem, and it involves many issues on many different levels. So having that contact over time, that interaction, that relationship, really, I think, can make a big difference.
It's really all about collaboration.
It is about collaboration.
Well, and we have to start it. I mean, we have to start the dialogue. We have to start from, you know, from my standpoint as a subspecialist, we get them referred, you know, way down the line, either with a disease process already secondary to obesity or because of the level of obesity. But even at that point, it's about looking at lifestyle. It's about doing anticipatory guidance. And it's taking every encounter and using it in some way to impact on this epidemic.
Perhaps it's a common misconception, but a lot of people seem to believe that most overweight kids will outgrow the situation. So should we really be concerned, and what are the serious health consequences of an obese child?
Well, you should be very concerned. In my practice, we're seeing children now with type 2 diabetes, which we never saw before. So what has been described in an obesity center from the Yale group is that overweight, particularly minority children who have impaired glucose tolerance, so already an abnormality of glucose, can progress to type 2 diabetes over a 2-year time period associated mainly with weight gain. And some of these children gained as much as 20 kilos in 2 years. And in addition, we know that impaired glucose tolerance, impaired fasting glucose, these associated with mainly minority kids are going to progress to diabetes if we don't do some kind of intervention. And it turns out that lifestyle can have a positive effect on both glucose and weight. So we have some really good evidence of the importance of lifestyle intervention.
I think the other thing that we need to be concerned about is hypertension. About 2 to 5% of children have hypertension, and about only 25% are actually being diagnosed. So physicians need to make sure that they're getting blood pressures appropriately, using an appropriate size cuff, checking that blood pressure, watching it, and then recommending lifestyle changes when we do see elevated blood pressure. In the past, you know, we would check cholesterol only on children who had a significant family history, but we need to be thinking about screening more children or at least addressing the lifestyle factors that might be taking place.
Exactly. There are some children who will have dyslipidemia, may need to take medications, but very rarely. Mm-hmm. Lifestyle really is important for all these kids.
And as another example of that is liver and the effects of being overweight on that, because we now know that fatty liver is another potential complication of being overweight. This we can theoretically measure by doing liver function tests. And again, part of the controversy is, you know, what's going to be the impact of doing these kinds of measurements? What do we accomplish beyond, of course, giving that important lifestyle message? Another important aspect is maternal imprinting. And this comes out of a study done
through the Center for Health Research from Kaiser Permanente in Portland, Oregon. And what they did was they studied 10,000 pregnant women and their children. They did oral glucose tolerance tests on the mothers and then followed the children's weight over 5 to 7 years. And what they found was as the mother's blood sugar went up, so did the risk of the children being overweight. However, if the mother's blood sugar during pregnancy was controlled, then the risk of the children being overweight returned to essentially a normal baseline.
Well, I mean, this does get back to this kind of feeding maternal diabetes, maternal overweight, maternal high blood sugar affecting the child, and then that child grows up, gets the same thing if it's a girl, and now her pregnancy is affected. Right. We really think this has a major impact on type 2 diabetes in children. But, you know, in addition, quality of life. I mean, we are looking at issues about not just medical, but psychological and psychiatric. And children with obesity have a quality of life actually equal to children with cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, huge impact. About at least 10% are clinically depressed and probably need some kind of intervention.
Well, this might be a good time to step back for a moment and get back to the basics in regards to terminology and classifications. I understand that there is some new terminology, and what specifically defines overweight in children versus obesity?
Well, recently an expert panel was convened by the AMA, the Center for Disease Control, and the MCHB, or Maternal and Child Health Bureau. And what this expert panel did was essentially change the terminology around the classification that has actually existed for several years. So, currently, children who are over the 85th percentile but up to the 94th percentile are now considered overweight. Previously, we described that as being at risk for overweight. Now, children who are over the 95th percentile up to the 99th percentile are actually termed obese, and previously, this group was called overweight. And the cut point has now been established at the 99th percentile for that obese population. So that's a new set of terminology.
Well, does that in itself make it controversial because we have made these changes?
Well, I don't think it matters what we call it. And I think often, I mean, I don't know how you guys do it in your practice. I don't necessarily say, oh, your child is obese or your child's overweight. I show the curve and discuss, you know, where we're going, where the trajectory is. But the really importance is that there's a risk, particularly in that overweight category and in that obese category, and we need to really start facing it. It was very difficult to talk to somebody being at risk for overweight.
It's an awkward title.
It's a very awkward title. And this actually matches better what goes tracking through to adulthood, so that, you know, 85th to 94th is really overweight for an adult.
I think the underlying concern is that some people are worried that by labeling children as obese, they're going to be stuck with this label that they then have to deal with, and that it may have some psychological harm. And so, as you said earlier, really addressing the health-related risk. We're not trying to label the child. We're trying to use this in a clinical conversation, but it is still a child, and this is not a judgmental diagnosis. This is just a number of issues that help us get at the health risks.
But I think we do have to label in our charts as such. I mean, if you do a chart review and you've got the, hopefully, definitely, the BMI plotted and categorized, you need to have that as in your problem list. And I think a lot of people don't. They're just plotting and not realizing, like the hypertension issue. You know, you put those numbers down, and then you have to be part of your problem list so you can address them.
Right. And also, it's a communication tool for other clinicians.
Right.
I mean, other clinicians review these medical records. They need to know that a diagnosis has been made, that you have considered that, and you are communicating that throughout the healthcare system.
Right.
We have these new terms, but we also have data that show that clinicians don't always take a BMI for age, much less to actually record it and address the issue. So what are some of the difficulties that clinicians face in addressing childhood obesity?
Well, first of all, you know, in a typical exam encounter, pediatricians and family physicians will usually obtain a weight. However, height oftentimes is overlooked or simply not done at all for sometimes quite some time. So if you're not obtaining weight and height at the same time, you can't calculate an accurate BMI. And of course, you're not going to be able to make that initial assessment of BMI percentile.
think a lot of clinicians talk about time. I just don't have time to do it. But over the lifetime of caring for that child and that family, you have plenty of opportunity to start to get to lifestyle habits. And obviously, the more you do, the more you know over time, the easier each encounter becomes. And you can start to move the metric slowly.
I think sensitivity of the subject is another critical barrier that clinicians face. Most of us don't want to offend our families. And because overweight and obesity is such a sensitive subject, I think even the notion of bringing it up, creates a little fear, a little anxiety in clinicians about, gee, is this going to be a problem for me in my relationship with my patients and families?
Well, but it's our job. We have a lot of sensitive areas. And I think, as we've discussed, if you talk and ask permission and show where that BMI is and get into it kind of, here's where we are, can we talk about it, then it does smooth away a little bit, I think, for not feeling that you're going to offend somebody. Mm-hmm.